A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The FT.
Welcome to this edition of World Weekly with me, Gideon Rachman. This week we look at the insurrection in Syria and the debate over Western intervention there. The death toll in Syria is now widely estimated to have reached a horrifying 70,000, and the pressure on the United States to intervene is mounting, particularly after evidence that the Syrian government may have used chemical weapons. So where does the debate stand? Joining me on the line from Washington is our correspondent there, Jeff Dyer. And on the line from Beirut is Abigail Fielding-Smith, who's been following the conflict in neighbouring Syria closely and has recently visited Damascus. Abigail, from the region, does it look as if this conflict is stalemated without some sort of Western intervention to tip the scales?
Certainly it's hard to see any change in the current dynamics in terms of the rebels being able to have a really significant breakthrough on the ground. They're complaining constantly about lack of ammunition and resources. Plus, they're also very disorganized amongst themselves. Meanwhile, the regime has demonstrated that it has the power to hit them very hard in sporadic, concentrated ways, but not to crush them altogether. So in the absence of other factors, you could see this going on for really quite a long time.
So, Jeff, I mean, there's debate about whether the West, and particularly the US, should get involved, has been raging for some time now. But I guess the new factor is that President Obama had said that the red line is the use of chemical weapons. And now there is some evidence that the Syrian government has used chemical weapons, albeit slightly equivocal evidence. Do you see the pressure for intervention mounting in Washington?
Some of the pressure is mounting, but when this news first came out last Thursday, I think it was, it seemed that this was the moment when everything would change and the U.S. would really have to alter its course. But since then, President Obama has gone out of his way to stress that he's going to take it very slowly. He wants to get much more robust evidence, much more robust information about chemical weapons use, and that he's not rushing into any dramatic change of course. I think since then we've discovered that evidence, although it's credible and likely that has been chemical weapons use, there are still big questions about it, about where it was used, how it was used. And there's this lingering suspicion in Washington that potentially administration could get manipulated by people who want to try and pull the U.S. into the conflict. So they want to get much more robust, concrete evidence before they make any real decision.
What about the wider strategic argument? I mean, I've heard it said, and so has everybody who's following this, that the jihadist wing, some of them actually linked to al-Qaeda, are now very prominent in the opposition. How does that affect the intervention debate? Does that make the Americans more or less likely to get involved?
In a way, it's making them a little bit less likely. I mean, one figure, for instance, is General Martin Dempsey, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was one of the group of advisors who went to President Obama last autumn and said that the U.S. should start arming the rebels. He's now since come out and said that because of the increasing prominence of jihadis among the rebels, he now thinks that's a much more difficult proposition. He's not nearly so clear that it would be a good idea. So there are different standards of opinion. There is a very vibrant debate within the administration about this, but I think that the greater prominence of the jihadis amongst the opposition is actually tilting the U.S. a little bit away from seeking to arm the rebel.
And Abigail, I mean, from your knowledge of the opposition, is there an identifiable non-jihadi wing that the West could confidently arm without thinking that these guys are eventually going to turn on us?
Clearly, large sections, the majority, in fact, of the people fighting on the ground are probably not jihadi in any sense. But the question of what their relationship with the jihadis are, whether you could guarantee that if you gave them weapons, they wouldn't somehow end up in the hands of people who've been sort of designated terrorists by the US, is a different question. I mean, one impression I have from talking to people who fight and live on the ground is it's all very integrated, and whilst we see Jabhat Nusra, the al-Qaeda-linked group, as this kind of dark, sinister force, it's just one group amongst many others on the ground, all sort of jostling in together, and certainly, from some people's point of view, it's one of the more effective and least corrupt fighting forces. It's also been sort of involved in the setting up of some kind of rudimentary local authorities in rebel-held parts of Syria. So at this point, it's becoming harder and harder to see how you could completely isolate Jabhat Nusra, not only from the rebel movement, but, you know, from the rebel-held areas of Syria.
And is it the case that Nusra, the jihadist sort of al-Qaeda-linked group, if that's not an oversimplification, that they are the favoured group when it comes to getting outside aid from the Gulf?
It's not really clear where they're getting their support from. They seem to be much better armed and more effective than many of the other groups on the ground. But it's not clear whether they're getting state sponsorship or whether they've just got superior fundraising networks. I mean, the other great thing they have going for them is that they tend to be the ones at the forefront when bases are exploded and overrun. So they get the first pick of the weapons there, which can either be used or sold. So they've had this sort of positive feedback loop as they've been taking over territory and bases. So it's giving them more resources and more clout, which in turn leads to more resources and clout.
Jeff, I mean, I was talking to somebody involved in the American debates, and he said, well, if we don't get involved, then the likelihood of having this result that haunts Washington of a kind of al-Qaeda-linked group eventually taking over Syria or a large part of Syria becomes even more pronounced. I mean, do the Americans have a sense of how they can get closer to achieving both their humanitarian and their strategic goals in Syria, or are they just kind of sitting back and watching with a degree of horror but not really knowing what to do?
Well, I think, yeah, there's a very intense debate within the administration precisely on this point. I mean, there are some people who say this is going to be a long run-out conflict. This is going to go on for quite a long time, maybe a number of years. And the idea that somehow we can quickly tilt the balance by getting involved and deploying arms to some people is an illusion, and that will just suck us in more into this conflict. But there are other people who are saying that, as you're pointing out, there not only are the jihadis getting prominence among the opposition groups, but also you're having these huge refugee problems that are developing in Turkey and Jordan and elsewhere, which are also potential breeding ground for all sorts of resentment and dislike of America, and that the U.S. can't just sit back and let this develop. It needs to get involved now and try and start shaping events on the ground, because otherwise it will spin out of control.
And what's your sense of how the debate is going? I mean, you've described the two schools very clearly, but given that President Obama has to weigh a lot of different considerations, not least public opinion, do you sense any change?
I mean, this does all come down to President Obama. He will be the one who will decide this, and he has already sort of intervened in this debate to fend back pressure from his most senior advisors to get more involved. So it is all down to him. The tone of his comments, he's spoken twice in the last few days about this since the evidence that chemical weapons was first surfaced last week. On both occasions, he's gone out of his way to try and dial back expectations of any swift change, of any decisive move by the administration. And I think that's probably where things are at the moment. Until, you have to think in the bigger picture, this is a guy who was elected partly because of opposition to the Iraq war. He's staked his reputation about getting out of Iraq and winding down the war in Afghanistan. He doesn't want to be lured into a new conflict in the Middle East, especially on evidence that he can't entirely trust. So until you get much more robust evidence about where and how chemical weapons were used and if they're being used on a regular basis, it's probable that he will be very reluctant for any dramatic change. However, on the margins, you could see some arming of some of the rebel groups, if only just to give the U.S. some credibility with those groups to try and boost their credibility on the ground. But if it does happen, that would probably be a very small, marginal type of action. It won't be a substantial shift.
So, Abigail, it sounds like there won't be a Western intervention, or at least a decisive Western intervention, for some time. So, from where you're sitting in Beirut and looking not just at Syria but at the wider region, at bigger questions like Iran, Israel's role, how do you see this playing out over the next year? Nobody can be sure, obviously, but what kind of scenarios do you have in mind?
Yes, I mean, it's very alarming in terms of the regional consequences. One thing which particularly here in Lebanon is on people's minds is the fact that Hezbollah, who are allied to Damascus but also to Tehran, seem to be getting much more involved in the conflict. Last night, Hassan Nasrallah, the Hezbollah leader, gave a speech in which he sort of said that Syria had friends in the region who would not be at fault, which was some of the strongest language he's yet used. But an escalated Hezbollah involvement has the potential to complicate things in all kinds of ways and to really drive up the regional stakes of this and possibly see some kind of blowback into Lebanon. So, yeah, I mean, that's just one of the kind of many regional consequences that you can envisage from this conflict going on.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there for now. Abigail Fielding-Smith in Beirut and Jeff Dyer in Washington, thank you very much indeed. That's all for this week. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.